That followed, he motioned to two men lying on couches near his own. His voice, when he spoke again, was low and commanding. Ptolemy, cousin, and you, Lucius, you will accompany us. The birth of a prince is a public occasion, and I will not deny my son the attendance of his subjects, even if he may be dead by morning. Ptolemy was the first to his feet. He was handsome and tall, with a glossy black beard that didn't hide a faint smile that hid everything. He had the air of a favorite, and the king, who seemed uncertain in his gait, allowed himself to be steadied like a child just learning to walk. Lucius, an agreeable nobody with a face as polished and pink as a new apple, the indisputable sign of ancient lineage, followed along a step or two behind. The corridor leading to the women's quarters was as black and airless as a burial vault. Amyntas took a torch from its wall sconce to light his way, yet the flame only seemed to gather into itself. He held the torch straight out in front of him as if trying to force back the darkness, but his steps were guided more by habit than by sight. "What happened?" he asked, his chin almost touching his shoulder as he murmured into Nicomachus's ear. "What went wrong? She's a strong woman." Nicomachus shook his head without disagreeing. "Her age, perhaps, and this child following so closely on the last. And there were complications. It was a hard labor, and the boy came out clutching the birth cord. He seems to have crushed it, so that I have no idea how long he was without his mother's sustenance."
"He crushed it? Such a thing is possible?"
"Anything that happens is possible, my lord." The physician offered a tense smile. "Your son didn't seem very eager to be born."
"With five royal brothers ahead of him for the throne, I cannot blame him."
Amyntas allowed himself one quick syllable of laughter, as if the joke had only just occurred to him, and then turned suddenly grave. "Yet it's strange that he should have crushed the cord. Never in a long life have I heard of such a thing." "Perhaps it is an omen," Lucius said, speaking a little too eagerly. "Perhaps my lord should send to Delphi."
"Yes, perhaps the house of Argeidae has whelped another Heracles."
Ptolemy laughed, making a display of his contempt for the idea. "It's never wise to neglect the gods," Lucius answered in a voice that suggested he would be just as pleased if no one heard him. Amyntas, with an impatient gesture, willed him to silence.
"Yet the oracle would not loosen her tongue without an offering amounting to some few talents of gold," he said. "And then she would make only a riddling answer, good for nothing except to tie a man's brains into knots. Besides, even if her prophecies were as easy to see through as her piss, the destiny of a sixth royal prince is certain to be obscure enough that I will not impoverish myself to find it out. Still, if he should be a Heracles after all and will strangle serpents in his cradle, he couldn't have done better than to begin with one plucked from his own mother's bowels."
Only Nicomachus didn't join the king in his laughter. His face was solemn as he appeared to study the flecks of dried blood still visible on his hands. The birthing chamber was a small room with only a single oil lamp to bathe the walls in its fitful light. The air stank of blood and exhaustion, so much that to breathe it seemed a labor at once unpleasant and useless. The Lady Eurydice lay in her bed, her breast so motionless beneath her thin tunic that for a moment it was impossible to tell if life still stirred within. Even her reddish golden hair appeared faded to the color of dead leaves. Her beauty, which had once made the king's lust course through his veins like poison, seemed no more than a shadow. They had washed the sweat from her brow and limbs, which looked as lifeless and yellowed as old wax. Only the eyes were alive, and like a dog's, they immediately sought her master's face. They appeared to study him with the intimacy of an enduring hatred. Amyntas didn't even glance at her.
"Phew!"
He shook his head in disgust.
"Clearly it's no insignificant blessing not to have been born a woman. It's like a battlefield in here, before they've carried off the corpses. My kennels smell better."
With a wave, he dismissed the Lady Eurydice's women, who bowed quickly and scurried away like field mice. The king looked about him without seeming to notice the cradle in one corner of the room, and only when he had apparently found nothing else to interest him did he lower his gaze to the figure on the bed.
"You have seen hard service, wife," he said coldly. Will you live?